Tonight we are going to continue our study on worldliness, and we're going to be discussing a subject that I doubt very seriously anyone in our audience tonight questions whether or not it's right or wrong. But nevertheless, it is a hot topic in our society. Everywhere you look these days, you hear people talking about homosexuality, homosexual rights, gay marriage, those kinds of things. So we are going to talk about it tonight. And as I said, I believe most here tonight know very well what the Scriptures have to say about it. So we're going to take a few minutes and we're going to see again and review what the Bible has to say about it. But then I want to talk and focus in on the movement itself and some things that you need to be aware of regarding it. Homosexuality has certainly become a prevalent part in our society. There's no question about that, really. It has infiltrated our schools, our media, our entertainment industry, and it is attempting to redefine the very concept of marriage. And if you've been watching the news any at all, you have realized that. However, homosexuality is by its very nature dangerous. And that's one of the things that you never hear anything at all about. Did you know that the average lifespan of a homosexual male, what would you think it would be? What would be your guess? Would you guess 60? You'd be wrong. Of course, I think it's the average lifespan of males in the United States these days is around 76 years old. Well, what about a homosexual male? Not 60. Not 50. How about 46 years old? Does that sound like a healthy lifestyle to you? You know, and we hear all this about smoking. I'm not supporting it by any means, but you hear all this propaganda against smoking and how terrible it is. Well, what will it knock off your life, they say, 10 or 15 years off the 75-year lifespan? Knock 10 or 15 years off of that. Well, what about homosexuality? It's amazing we don't hear about those kinds of things. Society is doing homosexuals a disservice by promoting it, in actuality. And it is encouraging people to engage in sinful and self-destructive behavior. Not only is it destructive to the individuals involved, it is also destructive to society as a whole. It is destructive through the healthcare industry. It's also destructive in a societal and moral perspective. Homosexuality is an issue of morality, and we're going to talk about that. But it is also a fundamental issue of public health. And I found a lot of statistics, sexually transmitted diseases and things. The percentages, by the way, did you know 88% of homosexuals possess one or more sexually transmitted diseases? 88% of them do. But we're not going to focus on those statistics so much tonight. The Bible, in Genesis chapter 2, verses 22 through 24, sets the precedence for God's means of propagating the human race. Genesis chapter 2, verse 22, "Then the rib which the Lord had taken from man, He made into a woman, and He brought her to the man." God didn't make another man for the man. He made a woman for the man. As you've heard said, God did not make Adam a seed, He made Adam Eve. And Adam said, "This is now a bone of my bones, a flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." Any other kind of sexual intercourse outside of marriage bond between a man and a woman is fornication. It's immorality. It's illicit sexual conduct. Any sexual conduct outside of the marriage bond between a man and a woman. One man for one woman for life. That's God's plan. That's the way it's supposed to be. Anything outside of that is sin. In Leviticus chapter 18 and verse 22, under the law of Moses, this was the regulation. "You shall not lie with the male as with a woman. It is an abomination." In Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 13, "If a man lies with a male as he lies with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination, they shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. It's their fault. They're going to be held accountable. And they die because of their choice. This is the punishment that God decreed upon homosexuals under the old law, as well as many other sins, of course. In Genesis chapter 19, verses 4 through 9, we're familiar with Sodom and Gomorrah. It says in verse 4, "Now before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both old and young, all the people from every quarter, surrounded the house. And they called to Lot and said to him, 'Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us, that we may know them carnally.' So Lot went out to them through the doorway, shut the door behind him, and said, 'Please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly. See now, I have two daughters who have not known a man. Please let me bring them out to you, and you may do to them as you wish. Only do nothing to these men, since this is the reason they have come under the shadow of my roof.' And they said, 'Stand back.' Then they said, 'This one came in to stay here, and he keeps acting as a judge. Now, we will deal worse with you than with them.' So they pressed hard against the man Lot and came near to break down the door." Now, the homosexual community says, well, Sodom and Gomorrah, the reason why Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, at least those in the homosexual community who believe in God, they try to make the argument that the sin wasn't homosexuality here. The sin was a lack of hospitality. That's the sin, they claim, that Sodom and Gomorrah was guilty of. But look at Jude's explanation of that text. In Jude 1 and verse 6, it says, "And the angels who did not keep their proper domain, but left their own abode, he has reserved in everlasting chains unto darkness for the judgment of the great day. As Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them in a similar manner to these, having given themselves over to sexual immorality and gone after strange flesh, are set forth as an example, suffering the vengeance of hell of eternal fire." Sexual immorality, going after strange flesh, there's the sin. God defines what their sin was and why they were destroyed. In fact, what does the word sodomy mean? Where do you think that word comes from? Romans chapter 1, verses 26 through 32, which was read in our hearing. Notice verse 26, "For this reason God gave them up to vile passions. For even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature." The homosexual lifestyle is against nature. Man and man cannot produce another person. Wonder why? It's not natural. That's not the way it's supposed to be. "Likewise, also the men leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men, committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which was due. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting." So certainly this is something God spells out, both in the Old and New Testament, as something that is wrong, something that should be shameful and should be looked on by society as shameful. We should view it as something that is debased, that is not fitting, that is not natural, that is against nature, wrong. He goes on, "being filled with all unrighteousness and sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them." Let me make this side note here. Among what society, or what part of our community, do you suppose crime is most rampant? Not only talking about health concerns, but what about crime? Did you know that in the homosexual community, the crime rate is more than triple what it is among regular community? The crime rate is astounding. And in fact, if you look at the sins that the Apostle Paul mentions here, they're all very common in the homosexual community. You just go down and look at the list of it. It's astounding when you begin looking at some of the statistics that are out there. The kind of crimes that are so prevalent in the homosexual community. Did you know that there are homosexuals who have as many or more than 1,000 sex partners? And did you know that the average homosexual will have 500 sex partners in his life? 500? You know, what about jealousy and all of that? I mean, it's a lifestyle that just breeds all kinds of sin. But not only that, the Apostle Paul also threw in those into the list, those who approve of those who practice such things. What about us? What if we are guilty of approving of those things? In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 9 through 11, do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor homosexuals, nor sodomites, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners will inherit the kingdom of God. And such were some of you. Let's make this point as well. Homosexuals, by the way, that word in the King James Version is effeminate, which points toward the individual in the homosexual relationship that plays the woman. And the sodomites, of course, that's the homosexual. Homosexuals and sodomites. What about those who practice such things? Can they change? Can they change? Absolutely they can change. And such were some of you, Paul said. But you were washed, but you were sanctified, but you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus and by the Spirit of our God. Yes, a homosexual can change. Don't let them tell you that they can't. They most certainly can. The Bible is rather clear about this. Again, Genesis 19, 1 through 28, God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Why? Because they committed sexual immorality, they went after strange flesh. That's what Jude says. In Leviticus 18, verse 22, it's an abomination. Leviticus 20, 13, an abomination, and the punishment was death. Deuteronomy 23, and verse 17, the perverted persons were put out of the land. That particular word also points to homosexuality in the Old Testament. 1 Kings 14, and verse 24, that term is found again in reference to homosexuality. 1 Kings 15, and verse 12, it's associated with idolatry. 1 Kings 22 and verses 46, perverted or banished from the land. 2 Kings 23 and verse 7, perverted. Judges 19, 22 through 30, the wicked, they are called outrage. It is an outrage and it was a vile act. Romans 1, 24 through 29, against nature and debased behavior. 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 10, they will not go to heaven. 1 Timothy 1, 9 and 10, there are laws against it. It is wrong and sinful and will suffer the vengeance of eternal fire. Jude verse 7. So clearly it is a sin. It violates God's plan for sexuality. Hebrews 13 and verse 4. The marriage bed. That's the only place that sex is permitted. Nowhere else. And that marriage is between one man and one woman. Matthew 19 verses 4 through 6 emphasizes that point. Fornication. That's what it is. It is fornication. Fornication is sinful. It's against nature. And specifically forbidden in 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 9. By the way, that is in the gospel. So, it is clearly a sin. Which again, I think most of us realize that. But let's talk about the agenda of the homosexual movement in our country. Harvard-educated marketing professionals Marshall Kirk and Hunter Madsen wrote a book that is acknowledged as the PR Bible of the gay rights movement. And there were three things that they emphasized in this book. How are we going, this is them talking, how are we going to gain acceptance in American culture? How are we going to move from a people that everyone looks down on and is not accepted in society to becoming an accepted member of society? How are we going to do that? Well, they speak of three things in this book. Number one, desensitization. Number two, what they call jamming. We'll talk about that. And number three, conversion. Now, what do they mean when they say desensitization? They write, the first order of business is desensitization of the American public concerning gays and gay rights. To desensitize the public is to help it view homosexuality with indifference instead of with keen emotion.
Ideally, we would have straights register differences in sexual preferences the way they register different tastes for ice cream or sports games. At least in the beginning, we are seeking public desensitization and nothing more. That's in the beginning. They want to desensitize the public's view of homosexuality. Just make the American public indifferent towards it. No big deal. That's their aim. We do not need and cannot expect a full appreciation or understanding of homosexuality from the average American. You can forget about trying to persuade the masses that homosexuality is a good thing. Of course, if you look at the evidence, you're not going to think it's a good thing. But if only you can get them to think that it is just another thing, then your battle for legal and social rights is virtually won. Once you get the public to become disinterested in it, to become desensitized to it, then you're on the road to acceptance and eventually even overtaking society, as it was in Sodom and Gomorrah. Desensitization. It consists of inundating the public in a continuous flood of gay-related advertising presented in the least offensive fashion possible. Now, do you see that going on today on television? There are very few sitcoms now that does not have at least one homosexual in it. And how are the homosexuals always viewed in these sitcoms? They're always the best person. They're always the person that everyone likes to be around. They're always the good guy. Have you noticed that? Maybe you don't watch enough sitcoms to notice it. I don't really watch too many of them either. But the ones that I've seen, that's the way it's been. There are comedians who make fun of, laugh at, and mock those who stand against homosexuality. I've watched a little bit of Jay Leno this past week. He went off the air Friday night. That was his last appearance on The Tonight Show. And all week long, he's been making fun of those who stood opposed to homosexuality in California. In fact, he had Governor Schwarzenegger on one night. And Governor Schwarzenegger assured the public that eventually homosexuality would be legal. Gay marriage would be legal in California. He assured that that was going to take place, that the vote last year would be overthrown, and the court there in California recently upheld the decision by the people to keep homosexual marriage illegal. But Governor Schwarzenegger assures us that that will be eventually overturned. But you see, you just have a continuation, a flooding of positive homosexual presentations by the media. They use the entertainment industry, the news media, public schools, politicians, judiciary system, etc. In fact, also this week, I was watching on Fox News, and they had an interview with a preacher out in California who is fighting the curriculum in a local school there in California. The curriculum begins at the age 5, kindergarten, teaching children the benefits of having homosexual parents. Can you believe that? Beginning in kindergarten, they're teaching children the benefits of having homosexual parents because apparently they have a few kids there in that school district that have homosexual parents. So they're conditioned, and they have a set curriculum to desensitize these kids at the age of 5 towards homosexuality. And of course, the judiciary system, you know, in California, they approved gay marriage. The courts did. Then the people came back and said, no, we're against it. We vote it down. And then the courts, of course, recognize they have to go along, at least for the time being, with the people's voice. But Governor Schwarzenegger assures us that that will eventually be overturned. The idea is to change how Americans think about homosexuality. What about you? Have they changed your mind about homosexuality, how you view it? Well, they're sure trying to, aren't they? Jamming is the second step. Now, what is jamming? This is the author's definition of jamming. It is psychological terrorism meant to silence expression of or even support for dissenting opinion. Anyone who speaks out against homosexuality, they're going to do everything they can to pressure them into keeping silent. That's what that means. Dr. Laura Schlesinger, a radio counselor and psychologist, experienced big-time jamming during the run-up to her planned television show. What they did, the gay rights movement got a hold of her sponsors, threatened her sponsors, and they withdrew their support for the program, and the show never aired. Why? Because she made one statement. She's been on the radio for years, you know. You probably heard her. But she's made one statement against homosexuality, clearly saying it was sinful. And because of that, they did not want her on the air. The homosexual rights movement won the battle. They kept her off the air by what they call jamming. They attack those who speak out against them. Conversion. That's the third step. Conversion. We mean conversion of the average American's emotions, mind, and will through a planned psychological attack in the form of propaganda fed to the nation via the media. They're trying to change our mind about homosexuality. They want to get you to see it as an alternative lifestyle, something that is accepted. And, you know, you see television like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Have you ever seen that program? Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. These guys, they come in and they teach a guy how to, you know, be a ladies' man and how to dress and how to act and all this. And so they're helping straight men attract women. But they're gay guys. And it just sets the gay people in a positive light. They're just a bunch of helpful guys that are really, you know, wanting to help society along. And they're just trying to change people's mind, trying to convert them to the idea that there's really nothing wrong with it. We mean subverting the mechanism of prejudice to our own ends to turn their hatred into warm regard, whether they like it or not. So they're trying to get people to like them. That's what this is all about. So how do they do it? Well, first of all, they desensitize the public by flooding the media of positive propaganda. Secondly, they attack those who are opposed to them. And then thirdly, they attempt to win over the people. And by the way, in the jamming process, they will find people who actually support their movement to go out and pretend to be Christians who act like Nazis or the Ku Klux Klan or some other extreme radical group to place Christianity in a demeaning, negative light. And while they all the time appear to be the good guy, Christianity, bad. Homosexuality, good. That's what they're trying to accomplish. They're trying to get society to view them in a positive light. They seek affection. Here's a quote. "We are no longer seeking just a right to privacy and a protection from wrong. We also have a right, as heterosexual Americans already have, to see government and society affirm our lives." That's what they're after. Also, here's another troubling quote. "The teaching that only male-female sexual activity within the bounds and constraints of marriage is the only acceptable form should be reason enough for any homosexual to denounce the Christian religion." And it is an attack against Christianity. By and large, there are those who claim to be Christians who are homosexuals, and they try to make biblical arguments. In fact, I've got a debate between Jeff Asher, a friend of mine, and a homosexual in Colorado. And also, I'm aware of a debate between John Welch and another homosexual. So there are those who are trying to defend it from a biblical perspective. But those are very rare. Most homosexuals are blatant anti-Christian because they at least understand what Christianity is supposed to teach on marriage and homosexuality. You know, the Bible's pretty clear on that. It's really hard for me to see someone trying to defend homosexuality from a biblical perspective. Now, they give it their best shot, but of course, the Bible's awfully clear about it. There are two major misconceptions propagated by the homosexual community, which further the gay agenda. Number one, homosexuals claim that they make up approximately 10% of the total population, and thus they're found in every group. Now, first of all, it's not correct that 10% of the population is gay. That's not true, as you'll see in just a second. Secondly, homosexuality is not found in every group. And that would say something about the idea of nature producing homosexuals. It's just not true. A person's sexual orientation is inherited genetically. That's their claim. An individual has no choice in whether he is heterosexual or homosexual. Now, these two misconceptions have gone a long way in changing people over, desensitizing people to the homosexual agenda. People have bought into these two arguments. But the truth is, both of them are false. The 10% number comes from a study based on Kinsey research figures in 1948. And this particular study has been proven to be flawed. Convicted criminals comprised a full 25% of Kinsey's male sample, compared to less than 1% of the total U.S. population. Most of the people surveyed were convicts. Most of them were convicts for, guess what? Sexual sin. Sexual criminal activity. Pedophilia, for example. Rape. Newsweek, February of 1993. Here's a quote. Says, ideologically, I would think, not sound science has perpetuated a 1 in 10 myth. Ideology, not sound science, has perpetuated a 1 in 10 myth. In the near half century since Kinsey, no survey has come close to duplicating his findings. Not even sort of close. Men aged 20 to 39, 1.1% exclusively homosexual in past 10 years. Alan Guttmacher-sponsored study. 1.1%. Not 10, but 1.1%. Less than 3% admit to being gay, 1992 New York Times post-election poll. Other figures, the Bell-Weinberg poll of 1970, 2%. The Cameron Ross poll, 1975 through 78, 3.1%. The Cantania NABS poll, 1992, 2%. 1.1%, Billy and Betel, 1993. Gay and lesbian couples, 1% according to census. So, you see that we're talking about between 1% and 3%, not 10%, as the claim goes. The most widely acceptable study on sexual practices in the United States is the National Health and Social Life Survey. They report and found that 2.8% of male and 1.4% of the female population identify themselves as gay, lesbian, or bisexual. Now, this does amount to nearly 4 million openly gay men and 2 million who identify themselves as lesbians. That's 6 million people out of the entire population of the United States of America. Nowhere near 10%. Think homosexual relations between consenting adults should be legal. Now, if you go back in time, let's think about this. What is the agenda of the homosexual movement? Well, number one is to desensitize the public regarding their view of homosexuality. What has happened over the years? You go back to 1977, the percentage was 43%. thought that homosexuality should be legal. In 1989, that number went from 43% to 47%. And during the years of Ronald Reagan, there was a conservative approach to a lot of things sweeping the country in the 80s. And so the number didn't jump very much, from 43 to 47% in 12 years. But then you go to 2001, the number jumps from 47% to 54%, and now to 60%. 88% of Americans believe gays should receive equal opportunity provisions in the workplace, just like other minorities. Again, since 2001, that number has risen 8%. So you see the trend. You see which direction American opinion is going. Concerning marriage, 48% are for gay marriage and 52% are against it. But with the trends going like they are, what do you think is eventually going to happen? The federal government of the United States does not recognize same-sex marriage and is prohibited from doing so, according to the Defense of Marriage Act. So the federal government right now has their hands tied. That is, until a case eventually comes before the Supreme Court. Same-sex marriage is currently legal in three states, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Iowa, and will be legal in Vermont September 1st of this year, and in Maine September 14th of this year. Maine was the most recent state to allow same-sex marriage, and the second state after Vermont to do so through legislative means. So through the state legislature, they got gay marriage on the books. And the gay and lesbian communities, they are trying very hard to push that in several states. Now, many states have anti-gay marriage policies in place in their constitution. So it's going to take a constitutional amendment to get it overturned. But I wouldn't feel too good about that if I were you. Because the way that things are going, that is going to be a focal point of their movement. Do you believe homosexual behavior is a sin? This was a question asked in LifeWay Research, April 10th through 12th of last year. This is broken down by different, especially religious, beliefs. All Americans, 48% say yes, it is a sin. 39% Catholics say yes, it is a sin. 61% of Protestants, Baptists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, or, well, Methodists, I should say, etc. 61% say yes, it's a sin. And born-again evangelical or fundamentalist Christians, that's the evangelical movement, conservatives who claim to be Christians, 79% say yes, it is a sin. But then when you ask the question, or when it's answered no, 45% of all Americans say no, it's not a sin. So there's a 3% gap there between 48 and 45%. And of course, Catholics, 55% say it's not a sin. Protestants, 31% say no, it's not a sin. And those who claim to be fundamentalist Christians say no 17% of the time. So you see which, you know, you kind of get a feel for which demographic is opposed to gay homosexuality. It's still those who cling to the Bible most strongly. They say that it is a sin, by and large. But many other religious groups, the homosexual agenda is making an inroad there. In 1977, 56% believed that homosexuality was caused by upbringing or environment. The 13% believing that homosexuals were born that way. Nature or nurture? Which is it? Why are homosexuals homosexuals? What caused them to be that way? Well, in 1977, people thought that it was because of their upbringing. 26 years later, in 2003, the percentage of Americans accepting the genetic argument has more than doubled to 38%, while the percentage agreeing that homosexuality is environmentally caused has dropped to 44%. So again, you see which direction the trends are going. Dean Hamer, gay researcher, says, "We knew that genes were only part of the answer." And he did some research on homosexual brain activity And he says, we assume the environment also played a role in sexual orientation, as it does in most, if not all, behaviors. Homosexuality is not purely genetic. Environmental factors play a role. There is not a single master gene that makes people gay. I don't think we will ever be able to predict who will be gay. Now, here's a quote from a gay homosexual. He's a homosexual himself. He's a researcher on the subject. They've been trying to find this gay gene. He says, we haven't been able to find it. Simon LeVay says, it's important to stress what I didn't find. I did not prove that homosexuality is genetic or find a genetic cause for being gay. By the way, he was quoted by the homosexual movement as saying, we found the gay gene. Dr. LeVay has proven that homosexuality is genetic. He's saying, no, that's not what I said. He said, I didn't show that gay men are born that way. The most common mistake people make in interpreting my work. Nor did I locate a gay center in the brain. Since I looked at adult brains, we don't know if the differences I found were there at birth or if they appeared later. He doesn't know. That's what he's saying. Camille Paglia, lesbian activist and writer, said no one is born gay. The mere idea that is possible is a flimsy fabrication of sloppy journalists and amoral queer activists. Any person, male or female, who cannot feel the sexual allure of the opposite sex has been traumatized by some early combination of social circumstances. Now, that's an amazing admission right there by Camille Paglia. Now, when you think about this nature or nurture argument, you know, they have been claiming and pushing this very hard. This is one of the keys of promoting their agenda, that we can't help it. We were born that way. Well, you know, let's say a fellow is born. He's tall. He has it in his genes to be 6'10". He's athletic. He's got good hand-eye coordination. Okay, what do you think the odds of he's going to become a basketball player? Probably pretty good, don't you think? He's got the inherited traits. His daddy was a famous NBA All-Star, let's say. So he's got it in his genes to be a basketball player. And then you have the instilled traits. His dad was an NBA All-Star, and he's instilled these competitive characteristics in his son. And he's a hard worker, and he loves sports. So he would probably make a pretty good basketball player. So he has the height, the athletic ability, the hand-eye coordination. But what if he doesn't have the instilled traits? What if his dad tried to get him more involved in music? Or more involved in some other social or cultural endeavor? What if he doesn't like sports that much? What if he decides, you know, I just don't care for sports. I'm more interested in these other things. You see, he has a choice. He may be tall, he may be athletic, and he may have good eye-hand coordination. Maybe he becomes a doctor, a surgeon. Well, there are certain characteristics that are generally common among those who turn out to be homosexuals, those who decide to be homosexuals. They have some particular traits in common with others, such as sensitivity, a melancholy disposition, hormone levels are a certain level. And all that may be true. They may be born with these particular traits. But they are brought up in an environment where they are taught right from wrong. They have proper role models. They have associations that are spiritually minded. And they are engaged in activities that, such as athletics and things of that nature. They are led away from homosexuality. They may have the traits, but does that mean they're going to be homosexuals? Absolutely not. But what if they're in an environment where they are encouraged to be homosexual because they're taught, well, you have this particular disposition. And they're role models are immoral people. Or maybe they've been abused as a child. And their association is with worldly-minded people. And they engage in activities that lead them down, such as drug abuse and alcohol abuse. What about those things? What about their environment? You see, yes, there may be some characteristics that would make them become more tempted by the homosexual lifestyle. That may be true, but that doesn't make them homosexuals. You know what? Some people have a tendency toward alcoholism. Their genetic makeup makes them vulnerable to alcoholism. Does that mean that they're going to be alcoholics? Do they have a choice? Pedophilia or anger. Someone says, well, I'm Irish and I'm supposed to be angry. No. You're supposed to control that anger. Gambling. Or really, you know what is in common with all these? The person who gives into them simply lacks the spiritual mind, especially the fruit of the Spirit of self-control. There's the problem. And tendencies toward these particular behaviors does not make them acceptable behaviors. If truth be known, all of us have something particular to us that we're more vulnerable in, some sin, some temptation that appeals to us far more than other things. My temptation will probably not be the same thing as what you would face. There are going to be differences. Cooper said when he came in, he was trying to pick out songs for the lesson tonight, and he said, I can't find any gay songs. And I said, that book's full of gay songs. Boy, how we've misused that word. Book is full of gay songs, happy songs, good songs. How we've perverted that word. But anyway, you know, Cooper said, that's something I would never be tempted to do. And I'm with you on that, Cooper. And I know most people wouldn't be tempted in that regard. But there are some out there that are. Those who have certain characteristics, they can be tempted rather easily with that. And something else, you know, I think especially, and they try to get a hold of young people in college, in high school. They try to get a hold of them while they're young and formative. Because one of the tendencies of teenagers is to be different. To kind of buck the system. You know, that's kind of something that's in all teenagers, I think. They go through that stage where they just want to be rebellious. Homosexuality gives young people that opportunity to be rebellious in that regard. There's an appeal to that to some. So we all have tendencies towards something that we shouldn't do. But the challenge of life is controlling our behavior according to God's will, knowing what God's will is, and then following that standard. Homosexuality is the same thing. You know, I've known men. I've got friends of mine who would have that melancholy disposition. You know, they had a certain taste and an eye for things, you know, and think in such a way that I think that they probably could be tempted along that line. I've got some friends that kind of fit that mold genetically, but they're not homosexuals. They're married, they've got children, they're very happy. So the challenge of life is controlling our behavior. Again, self-control. It is a learned behavior. By the way, you know, the Bible does condemn it. And since the Bible condemns it, we know it's a choice. God does not condemn someone. And boy, this just burns me up every time I hear this argument from the homosexual movement. It burns me up every time they try to equate the homosexual movement and their rights that they want to have with equal rights of those who are a minority of race. That burns me up when they try to make that equivocation. Burns me up when they try to equate those two. It's not the same thing. Not the same thing. The Bible does not condemn a person for being a woman. But the Bible does condemn someone for being a homosexual. The Bible doesn't condemn someone for being black. Or yellow, or red, or white. Yes, that's the way we're born. And we are to embrace that. There's nothing wrong with that. But then they come along and they try to equate the homosexual lifestyle with that. The Bible condemns homosexuality, my friend. It's sin. Same with any sin, such as drinking or fornication. We have to say no. If you have a temptation toward those things, say no. Say no. And of course, the testimony of the gay and lesbian community themselves, they have acknowledged, some of them have, that it's not inherited. But they're still pushing that in the forefront. They're still saying, no, we can't help it. We can't help it. Homosexuality is sinful. It's against the law of God. There is an active and militant pro-homosexual agenda out there. We need to be aware of it. And we need to know how to fight it. We need to, of course, the battle begins in our own mind. Not allowing them to desensitize us. And realize that we are going to be the targets of the homosexual movement. To jam us and to convert us. It is advocated by deception, by lies, and homosexuality can be overcome. That is the truth. There have been thousands, if not millions, of homosexuals who have been converted to the truth, or at least to Christianity to some degree, to some form of following the Bible. They have changed their lifestyle because they have come to believe it is wrong and they've stopped. So it can be done. We need to prepare for persecution by the government for upholding the godly, conservative, Bible, moral standards. We need to prepare for persecution. I've said it before. I've said it several times, in fact. The day is coming in this country where preaching a sermon like I've preached tonight will be against the law. The day is coming. In the schools, those of you who have children, you prepare for books and teachers to attempt to redefine marriage. Be prepared. It's going to happen. It's already happening. California and other states as well. It is happening. Morality in our nation will continue to decline. I'm afraid that that is the case. What's next? Are we going to have some lawsuit brought before the Supreme Court trying to get someone the right to marry their horse or dog or something like that? What is next? You know, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised. If you were asked 20 years ago if homosexuals would be allowed to marry in this country, what would you have said? And we have 5 states now where by September 14th it will be legal. What would you have said 20 years ago if you were asked that question? Which direction is the trend going? My friend, we need to think about that. And yes, we do as Christians need to step up, stand in the breach, stand up for what's right, and don't give in. Don't give up. Stand firm in what is true. And by the way, going back to this health risk thing, homosexuality is destructive for society, not just from a moral perspective, but also from the health perspective. And let me tell you, you're talking about the destruction of America? This is one of the things that can bring it down. Rome, case point number one. Maybe you're here tonight and you're not a Christian. Hadn't talked about that at all. If you are here and you have never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, you have the opportunity tonight to obey the Lord Jesus Christ in faith, repentance, confession, and baptism. And you can be raised to walk in newness of life to serve the Lord. And if you don't know what you need to do, well, I'd like to talk to you about that. And I'd be more than glad to sit down with you with my Bible and we'll go through what the Scriptures say that you must do in order to be saved. If you are a Christian and you stumbled, then you need to make that right before God. And of course, as Christians, I think most of us in this audience are striving to live for the Lord. But we need to know that we need to be bold and we need to take a stand and we need to let our voices be heard. We need to let our legislators know. We need to speak up and be heard. Because the silent minority right now is getting all the press. They're the ones who are... They're not silent, really, are they? This is a silent majority. They're the vocal minority, is what I should say. They're the ones who are getting out the message. And we need to stand up for what's right. Maybe you're here. Won't you come if we can help you in any way in your obedience to the Lord?